Hallo und herzlich willkommen zu Geschichten aus der Kluft, Staffel 3, Folge 2. Ich bin Bart, ich bin wieder am Start und dieses Mal habe ich einen ganz besonderen Menschen an meiner Seite. Dracos, schön, dass du da bist.
Bro, hallo. Du hast nur in Englisch wo das gesprochen und es war so seltsam für mich, weil du hast Deutsch gesprochen. Mhm. Deine Voice ist das Butter. So gut. Ich denke, was kann ich bringen für diese Folge heute? Und ich denke nichts, wenn du sprichst so schön.
Ich glaube, du kannst einiges bringen, neben diesem wundervollen deutschen Intro. Für die Leute, die Dracos nicht kennen, Dracos hostet, castet, macht sehr viel in der LEC an Content. Die LEC ist praktisch dein Ding. Aber vor allen Dingen auf Englisch. Wir haben zwar dieses kleine deutsche Intro, aber damit Dracos nicht leiden muss, starten wir jetzt ins Englische und reden ein bisschen zusammen über die LEC, was an Content so passiert und wie das Leben so ist, ne, im englischen Broadcast. Ich selber war ja lange im Deutschen und ich bin gespannt, einen Einblick zu kriegen, wie es bei dir aussieht. Dracos, at first, how are you feeling today?
I'm good. I'll be honest, it is incredibly hot outside. I'm sure people will be able to see in the YouTube version of the episode that we're both sweaty gentlemen. But honestly, I love the summer and we're in the best part of the year, which is kind of in the build up towards Worlds season finals for LEC. So everything has big stakes. Everything is important. So it's a great time of the year for me. Yeah.
And Worlds is in London as well, right? It's pretty close again. So we might have the chance to go there to watch the games live, which is always nice. Yeah, I introduced you. You're part of the LEC team.
I am.
Part of the LEC crew for a long time now. So I think most of the time we're starting this podcast with talking about how we met each other or got into league, right?
Yeah.
So how was it for you? I remember when I prepared for this little talk, I've seen that you had another name when you started to get into casting and no one knew how to pronounce it. And you even made a video about it, right?
Yeah, it was the worst branding of my life. Of course, at this point, I didn't really understand branding. Like, I think a lot of people, when you're making your first name for online games, or in this case, it was like my third name for online games, you're like, what can I get that I won't have to put a bunch of numbers or random symbols after? Yeah. And it was Sepha, but it was spelled T-S-E-P-H-A. I got it from a random Warhammer 40K book, like a side. I just looked through the index of character names and I was like, I'll do that. And no one had it. And I was like, oh, I'm so smart. I found out this great name. And I kept it when I got into working in League of Legends. First it was graphic design and then eventually podcasts and then eventually casting. And it was Crepo at the time who looked at me and he was like, your last name is great.
Yes.
Your caster name is terrible. What are you doing? Everyone else was like, oh, yeah, you know, people will figure it out. Like, they might not be able to Google it or spell it, but they'll find you. It's fine. And he was like, no, it's terrible. You have to change it. So we made a quick video with, like, one of the random video editors who's around who had a bit extra time to, like, do a quick rebrand. And I was such a... If I had to do it today, it probably would be like a way more complicated decision. But I was like, I was a baby back then.
Yeah.
You know, there's only 100 people following me, whatever. So yeah, the real OGs know about my horrible branding decisions. I think it's safe to say. But yeah, Dracos, a much simpler, more elegant solution since it's my actual last name. Woo.
Yeah, and I think everyone knows you now, at least if they've watched LEC during the last couple, 6 years, 7 years even.
Yeah.
It's been a long time, right?
It's been a journey.
Yeah, and a lot of things changed when I remember, like, I've been part of the German broadcast for a long, long time. And when we started, we had to be super professional. And then there was a time where we could be a little bit more loose and experiment and stuff like that. And I think you had the same kind of journey where the LEC broadcast obviously changed a lot of things, tried a lot of things. And I think we're going to talk about this today a little bit. And other things you want to bring up, we talked before the podcast as well. And we figured there might be some topics that we can talk
about.
Bonus
topics.
Yes. We have a lot of things to say, actually. But when you started in the LEC, what was your first feeling coming into it? Because LEC or EULCS at the time has been such a big big prestige project, right?
For sure. I think like a lot of people in that era of esports, and certainly probably most people who are even coming into esports now, you had to approach it with a level of professionalism. Like, professionalism is what got you the job. I think there were a lot of people when esports started, and and even when any esports starts, if the people working on it don't have a ton of experience, they're like, what do we do? We copy sports.
Yes.
And, you know, and especially because Riot is LA based, it's like American sports a lot. So a lot of the sports center, tight knit professionalism, you know, very not, I won't say overwhelmingly dry, but very straight commentary.
Yes.
You're not doing weird stuff. You're not doing random bets or skits or anything like that. And so I was just doing my best to fit into that. And I was so overwhelmed because a lot of the people that I had looked up to for so long, Quickshot, Deficio, Crepo, Aphia, Shox, were there. And I was just like, if professionalism will make the bosses happy, and then I'll do whatever makes these people happy, because these are like my idols and I just really, really want to impress them.
Yes.
But then I think there was this moment, and it sounds like you guys had it as well, on the German broadcast for a long time, where you start to realize, like, our audience isn't the traditional sports audience. Like, the people watching this are the people like us who are like goofy and grew up playing games. And like, yeah, there's still like, you want to treat Worlds like Worlds, of course. You don't want to be disrespectful to the game, but people like watching content. You know, people like the goofy stuff. People really love personality. And it was a slow change for us. I think externally people would be like, 2019, it just got weird. And like 2018, it started, 2019 got weird. But I think it was much slower behind the scenes when you're actually a part of it. But yeah, I don't know. How was it for you guys? Was it just like one day you're like, let's try something crazy? Or was it a matter of someone was like, hey, we need to do something new? What was the moment that you remember when the German broadcast like actually started to do stuff that wasn't just, and for our next game, this team versus this team, let's talk about them, analysis.
Well, actually, I think for us, it has been a lot of back and forth.
Yeah.
We started pretty unprofessional, as the higher ups would call it.
Unprofessional. Yes.
But we made a lot of jokes. I think the German broadcast at the beginning was only Maxime and Mori, and after that, Solar. And they've been just basically themselves. Solar always tired, sometimes sleeping during the stream. It was hilarious. And we had to become a little bit more professional.
Sure.
And I think we became too professional to some degree. Well, we had like every show was the same. We had to wear suits. I don't know how it was for you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. 100%.
I especially remember when we started Prime League, which is 4 or 5 years ago, I think. And we had this sports studio, basically, like from professional sports, copied 1-to-1. And we had to wear suits. It was always hot. It was nice to dress up in some kind of way, but it also felt weird because we were just gamers.
Yeah, 100%.
We wanted to wear like joggers and like shorts, but we couldn't. And then we started to figure out a way to be ourselves in this professional kind of way and started to integrate it a little bit. So our sponsors and the higher ups would recognize that being ourselves is totally fine, and to ease them into this non-professional kind of way that we had. It was weird. We tried a lot of things. Some worked, some didn't. But I think we found our own way. And I think that is a very important thing to learn as part of a broadcast.
Yeah.
Every talent is different. You are a different type of caster or a creator than everyone else that you're working with. And you have your unique strength and kind of way to do stuff. And for me, because I've been a host for like the last 3 years, it was always about knowing what my casters or our guests feel most comfortable with and putting this into the spotlight and letting them be themselves, basically.
Yeah. I think that's the host role is always interesting to me, because I think like a truly great host is often like very subtle. And I think people don't, by nature, you're pushing the spotlight onto other people. So it's often a role where I think, unless you're like really, you're as prestigious as someone like Shox, people will often underestimate like the amount of little things, the subtle things, the like the way you set up a question. So you're basically setting up someone to slam dunk with some genius point. And you're like, wow, what a great point that you obviously knew was coming. You know, I think so. That's a cool thing to hear about. On the LEC side, I think it was very similar. I think the difference was there was never that early goofy period.
Yes,
there was to a certain degree, I think, before they moved out of the studio in Cologne and came to Berlin, but I kind of wasn't there for that era, so I wouldn't be able to tell you the specific details. I think for us it kind of happened in two places. It was when we started Euphoria, which was the podcast that's still running today, with me and Deficio as hosts. that was one of the first times we were making content every week that wasn't directly attached to the show. And so there was kind of wasn't this expectation out that it didn't have to be, it could be super loose.
You could be more freely, right?
You could be more free, yeah. More casual. We could try things. We could have weird bets and weird challenges. And that was kind of eased people in, I think, behind the scenes to idea that, hey, maybe this stuff has legs. Maybe this stuff can work. And then at the same time in broadcast, you have Vettius, Andrew Day, who is honestly like such a, I can't undersell him. It's so crazy because I think where me and DeFicio were like, oh yeah, maybe we could do this, maybe we could do that. And our producer came in, Phil, who's been off and on the producer for Euphoria for a long time, was like, yeah, we can make that happen. Like doing this little extra work to make sure that these weird ideas, like a sumo contest or like one of the very, very early rap battles could come to life. Vetti was just unafraid to pitch the weirdest things. He's like, put me in a giant muscle suit. I'll talk about flex picks. He's like, me and Medic are going to be detectives. We're going to do... And it was... I think that the way that people reacted to it at first was like, no. Mm. But he just kept trying. And eventually one got in and it did pretty well. And he just kept going. And I think that's kind of the person, like, he was the biggest factor. I think I got to do like the professional test bed, yeah, where it was like, maybe we could do this. And he was kind of like the hammer that kept hitting, you know, kept going. And it was never rude. It was never disrespectful. He was always just really excited about it.
Yes.
He was the guy that kind of let us break into that 2018, 2019 and onward era where we could do music. We could do weird skits. We could get the players to come with us to do bizarre challenges or things and really try to elevate personality. Mm-hmm. But it was, I think, similar to what you're talking about. It's always, for me, when it comes to creative pursuits, especially that are very reliant on individual talent on a broadcast, yes, individual creators, it's a lot about experimentation because mm-hmm. I think it's easy to tell people like, hey, be yourself. But for a lot of people that are going to stand in front of a camera that their entire career up to that point has, be myself means stand very straight mm-hmm. and like be very professional. It's really hard to like unlearn some of that stuff and really figure out what it is that you can bring. And I think that Vetti, myself, and some other people behind the scenes as well, shout out to Margot, who really produced a lot of that stuff and was willing to ask for the money to make that stuff, which in hindsight was probably the hardest part because we were just like, here's a crazy idea. And if she said no, we kind of just gave up. But she was the one who actually had to go get the budget for it. It was just, those were the kind of the people in the moments that really allowed us to branch out and start to experiment. And I think that once that catches on, it really is contagious because...
Yeah.
If someone's dumb idea works, you're like, well, maybe this thing that I've thought is a dumb idea maybe isn't so bad, mm-hmm. and it really starts to take over. So.
I think also the viewers have to be open for it, and sometimes they don't know what they want until they have it, right?
Sure.
I remember the time when Vettius started to do Flexius, and you did the whole do thing where you had Medi Vetti and stuff like that.
Yeah.
When you really started to integrate that content into your shows, a lot of viewers were like, well, that's kind of cringe. Oh, yeah. That's unprofessional,
yeah,
right?
Sure,
but
yes.
This is the first thing that people do if there's something different to the broadcast you did before. But then they started to like it. And I think that's how you have to do it. You have to be sure that it works. And I think Vettius was sure. Or at least
sure.
He had fun, right?
Yeah.
And if you're just doing it in such an authentic way, I think people will start to like it or feel it in some kind of way. And I couldn't imagine the LEC broadcast being different than it is now.
Yeah.
I talked to you before we started the podcast, the recording, because I couldn't contain myself. I think during the last years, music also became a bigger part of the show.
Yeah.
And for me, it was like, you've been a big part of this because you've been in every rap battle.
Yeah.
You made
yeah.
every cipher. And I know that you enjoy music on a personal level as
yeah.
well. And I think this is also a thing that I really liked because I saw that the LEC took inspiration from other things. Like for me, it had that epic rap battles of history kind of.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, 100%. You know,
Yeah. How was it for you to go into that? And what is maybe going to come during the next month, weeks, years?
Music was, it was really interesting because I think Vettius and I together, we're both really excited about music. Mm-hmm. And obviously, like, Riot as a whole for Worlds, et cetera, has always been doing. They have a fantastic music team.
It's
right?
Awesome.
Incredible.
Riot Music is
awesome.
Awesome.
And we were like, what if we did that, but without any of the necessary skill sets to back it up? And like, we have a little bit of skills here and there. Like, Fetty played guitar for a long time, and he's really, really passionate about music in his own way, right? And like, had a lot of the right ideas and I think the right motivations. And I would say it's probably the same for me, where I really loved hip hop and had like messed around when I was really young with whatever legally purchased version of music software, very legally purchased version of music software I had gone with. And when it started, it was just, we had extra resources and we knew we could make, for the first rap battle, we could make something.
What was the first rap battle?
First rap battle was Misfits versus G2. And it was set up to be, because Misfits were on an undefeated streak, even though G2 were the favorites. And then the problem is you have to make it 2 weeks in advance. So like, when we started, they were doing really well. By the time it came out, they were like not very good, which was really awkward. We learned, this is the first time we learned that rap battles are actually really hard to make, because you have to plan them ahead. But also in a single week, the team that you were trying to hype up can just be terrible.
Yes.
So that was tricky. And it was actually Vetti who was like, I really, really want to do that. And it was Epic Rap Battles of History that had really inspired him. He's like, I think this is great. We can really do this. And for me, I reacted, I think, like a lot of people probably reacted when they first heard this idea or saw this piece of content. I was like, Vetti, this is going to be cringe. And he's like, no, no, it won't be. It will be great. We can do this. And he's like, but I need you to write. He's like, I don't know how to rap. And I was like, well, I'm not great, but like, we can figure it out. And that's kind of honestly what happened. And it really is, again, he is the guy who's just not afraid. He will try any idea. Like, if he is excited about an idea, he is convinced it's the best idea in the world, for better or for worse. And we've gotten into fights about it. You know, it's not always, there's friction there. But, you know, he really pushed it through. And I think the first one showed, even without, like, we didn't have a studio. We didn't go to a studio to record it.
How did you do it then?
We had a microphone, probably worse than this, that they used for player interviews attached to, there's a device next to us that the audience can't see, but just like a basic, like, Tascam, like, digital recorder. It's just something you plug a cable into, mic, then we would put on a pair of headphones, we would play the beat into the headphones, and then we would just start rapping when we went. And I remember, we got back like three different versions, and me and the editor at the time, Dennis Berganda, were arguing because I was like, no, this is not where my flow starts. And I felt like such a dork because it was like for this League of Legends battle, but it ended up being so cool. And I still remember, because he helped us on a lot of the other ones too, we would always fight about this until we moved into an actual studio, which happened from the second one on, because basically the recordings were so just bad, because they were just so bad. I were literally just like covered in a blanket with a microphone in a random office room in Riot. I'm sure everyone outside this office room hates us because they're not soundproof at all, shouting and repeating, and someone's like, yeah, do it again, but they can't actually listen back to the take, so they just think that maybe it wasn't good. And then the poor editor on the other side, Dennis, is the one who's just like trying, with who's the only person in this process with enough music experience to actually be involved in the music process, like, yeah, I guess we can fix it in post. Like, sure, guys, no problem. And it turned into that first one, which was scrappy, but it was good. Mm-hmm. And from there, you know, we just kept upping the ante in one way or another, trying for new things. I think Vetti, myself, and kind of all the producers who were involved on it over the long lifespan learned a lot more about music production secondhand. We found good partners we like to work with.
You also created real music videos for that, right?
Yeah.
I remember the thing with Aphia, and you even invited Dan Bull and Falcon Shield at some point, and you shot a music video, and it became a lot bigger than where you started, right?
100%.
But it's also, sorry.
No, go ahead.
It's also, for me, it's super interesting to see where you started, because everyone is just seeing this big production on screen or in the live stream. And to imagine, I mean, I know it because I did stuff like that myself.
Yeah.
But to start in an office with like just an interview mic to begin the music journey in this way is like crazy. And I think it's also nice to hear, because no one would imagine that kind of production.
Well, you say Riot Games in music, and you immediately think of like Rise.
Yes.
You so know, oof.
They
you don't think
have
of
a
random
music
closet, but we don't in Berlin, right?
Yeah.
And like, we could have asked for help. It might have taken time. And that team, believe it or not, was probably better, should use of their time would be to make world songs than to help with the first rap battle. But yeah, I think that I feel very grateful that we had Riot kind of give us both this creative opportunity, mm-hmm. because I think that it's very different to make something for a product or for a group of people, like a fan base like the LEC, who, you know, even if they don't like it, you know you're making it for them. And it's not really about like your identity as a creative. It's about, yes. like, how can I make something great for them? And it's a nice way to ease into the creative process, because mm-hmm. I think there's probably a lot of people out there who like want to get into some kind of creative act. But when you're making something for yourself and you're releasing it as yourself, it's so much scarier. And all you ever see
is the
best version of what people have posted on social media. Even us, right? Like, we're always going to release the most polished thing. We're not going to release the first version that we recorded in a blanket in a meeting room. That would have been terrible.
Well, some of us do. So,
well, yeah. And sometimes you have to. And there's nothing wrong with that, right? But I think that people forget that you're not like... The road to being great at something starts with being really bad at something, but you just have to do the thing.
I totally agree. I also think that, like, there are two things that you mentioned up until now that are pretty interesting. And the one thing is when you started to become a caster or part of this broadcast, you had to be, like, straight back and, like, be yourself, but be the kind of... or the version of yourself that everyone expects you to be, more like not being your true self. And also when you started doing content, you're doing it more for the viewers, not 100% the way that you would like it to be. And I think that is also a part that I at least struggled with from time to time.
Sure.
Because to some degree, you have to be a personality on stream, right? You have to show up, even if you have a bad time in private, you have to be energetic or at least happy and entertain people, right? So how was it for you? Did you have like some moments where you really questioned what you are doing or what you're doing as part of the broadcast, what you're doing personally, right? Has there been any point where you like really sat down and thought, well, maybe League of Legends isn't for me. Maybe I should try something new? Or did you find a way to integrate stuff into the show that made you feel more like yourself?
Yeah, I think that that line between straight back, as we've been calling it this entire time, very like like dry and like complete authenticity has been actually good for me. I think that the burden of being like a public persona and having to show up with, you know, on a hard day and still deliver a great cast is something I've struggled with. Like, I've had historically like a couple of really big stinkers for casts. And those are days where I'm having a tough day because I'm a pretty like emotional guy. I wear my heart on my sleeve. But I think that for me, when it comes to a lot of the content stuff, it's actually really nice to know that you're making, like when we made Reckless with My Heart, right? Like it we knew what we wanted it to sound like and we knew who we were making it for, mm-hmm. which made it way easier than if you're trying to make something like, if you want to make music for yourself and it's about yourself, that's a much deeper, like, how authentic is it? How do you convey that? But for Reckless My Heart, we knew the sound we wanted, this 2000s era kind of emo music. We knew that the story we wanted to tell was about betrayal. And it could be, you know, it could be dramatic because it was supposed to be dramatic and over the top. And I think that like having the structure of those kind of prompts or ideas, mm-hmm. on what a content piece or what an analyst desk or what a cast should look like is nice because I think it frees you from needing to 100% make every decision from yourself. And it means that that little bit of framework really lets you in the other spaces mm-hmm. actually focus there in terms of where you want to, how you want to be, how you want to be creative, what you want to do. So for me, there's such a thing as too much structure that you're talking about where you feel boxed in and, oh man, I'm so stifled, I can't do anything.
Yes.
And I have at a couple points felt that way. I think that there are times where, you know, I'm so convinced, or me and Vidi are so convinced we've got a great idea, but it doesn't really fit into, you know, the plan, or there's not the budget sitting around for whatever reason, you know, or maybe it's actually just a terrible idea and people are trying to tell us as nicely as they can that it's a terrible idea. And that's always frustrating. That can always be a tough process because there is a give and take when you're making something for as a part of a bigger product and not just for yourself. But for the most part, I think the structure of a broadcast, the structure of like needing to make something for LEC as opposed to make it for myself is actually super, super freeing, which is weird because I think for a lot of people it can be, when you are a really strong personality, kind of stifling. But for me, it's like, as long as it's not too much, I have just enough room to be like the weirdest version of myself without going off the rails completely and making something that isn't really good for the audience or good for like the people in charge. You know what
yeah,
I mean? Like,
because
I think at, you know, I don't know, maybe that would be good if I had that full freedom, but there is, it's nice to have that fallback, that safety net of knowing, hey, here are the goals, here's what we're trying to do. And that kind of stops me from feeling like everything needs to be exactly how I want it, and can instead be everything needs to be exactly how the plan wants it or how we've envisioned it.
I mean, you're still doing story meetings and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
Where you get that kind of guideline
yeah.
to align with. And I think that can be freeing, because if you're creative, you might have a lot of things in your mind and a lot of ideas, and some fit, mm-hmm. some don't.
Yeah.
And if you have this kind of guideline, it's easier to figure out what things you should do or you can do, right?
Yeah.
And then some in what kind of way as well. So yeah, I see what you mean. And I think for me, it was the same with Prime League, because we like had the storylines always were set, and we had this guideline how we wanted to present ourselves,
mm-hmm.
right? But I still try to find a way where I could do what they expected me to do in my own kind of way.
Yeah.
And I think if you find a way to do it like that, if you know what the guideline and what the goal is that you're working towards, but you're doing it in your kind of way, that is like one of the most important things when you're in a creative job, right?
Yeah.
Because like you said, if you have too much of a structure, it can be exhausting, it can be draining, because you have to be creative, you have to be open-minded, but also you are like boxed into some cage or theme, I think. Is there anything, because you talked about it before, where you mentioned bad ideas that you've been talked out of, is there anything you really wanted to do but you didn't have the chance to do, or something super crazy that you were like, oh, this, we have to do this, definitely, 100%, and everyone's like, Drakos, come on, that's a bad idea.
No, so for me, I've the thing is I usually leave my, like, I would always go to someone and chat, and if they were like, no, there's no way we can ever get this approved, you know, I'd do like a loose like pitch, an outline, maybe some like examples from other ideas, and I'd be like, all right, I'll move on. But it's really is just Vetti who is the crazy one, who is like, yeah, and I don't want to leak because his ideas might still get made, so I won't save his. I'll say there's one this most recent year, a couple years ago, where I really want, I think we've done a lot of stuff with music and I like that.
Yeah.
But I think that a lot of our music, because it's so narrative driven or whatever, kind of already tells you what the video is going to be. I really wanted to make music because music is expensive. Fun fact.
True.
Music's expensive. Making music when Vetti and I are full time already is comparatively cheaper, believe it or not. and I think what I really wanted to do was try to make more specific music for trailers and for like start of year pieces, because I always felt like either you were spending all the money that we had on like one song, one really cool song, and you've heard it in esports pieces, like sometimes they do spend money on like really cool songs, like LCS has had a lot of great trailers that have, you know, a really strong music piece behind it, and I don't know how much that cost, so I'm not going to say maybe that was really cheap for them, I don't know, but for us it was always kind of this big thing. And so I wanted to make music that we could talk about the story first, and then we could make about our league and like the thing we're trying to convey, you know, and then we could make a song, and then we could make a video, and we could really make everything super tailor-made and fit together. But the problem with that is, even if like I was like, oh, put the money, it'll work, it's like da da da, it's like the split starts in 2 weeks, everyone just got back from Christmas, you know, like we just got back from holiday, there's like no way. And I think that's like one of the most stressful things about trying to make content in esports is that the calendar all year is so dense that like there's a lot of ideas that were just not feasible. Like there were a lot of versions of rap battles that we just couldn't make because the timeline was tight. Like the reason that we were able to do the Cypher was because it was just every team was in playoffs. That was it. We knew it was gonna be the teams that have made it to playoffs, great, right? Or the teams that have made it to season finals, it was top six, and we knew four of those teams or three of those teams very well in advance. So like those teams we hadn't written the parts for, but we knew, like we'd written some two liners, some four liners, and it was like set up, we could do it well in advance. But the cipher only worked because there were exactly those six teams. If like it only worked out because we could do it so far in advance. And so I think a lot of the reason that our ideas die is usually just because there's not time.
Yeah.
Or in the case of Vetti, if you're ever, you know, if he's ever around, you can ask him about some of his truly unhinged ideas.
I will do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would be nice. That would be a little bit more crazy, maybe. I think time has always been a big problem in esports because, like you said, you have basically League of Legends is like the whole year. You have something. I think you're starting with spring splits, summer splits. You have even in December or November, it's like All-Stars.
Yeah,
been a big thing, right? MSI in between the splits, then Worlds. You really don't have an off time. And for me, it was always like, when do I go on vacation, if
sure.
I ever do, right?
Yeah, sure.
Is this a problem for you as well, to find spots where you can take your time to recharge and do stuff on your own? I know that you are climbing as well.
Yeah.
Are you still bouldering?
Oh, 100%.
Yes?
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. I hate most forms of physical exercise, but climbing is just always stuck for me.
Same for me.
It's because it's a game. I think, honestly, if you're listening to this and you're a gamer and you're like, no exercise has ever been fun, climbing.
Every route is like a little level.
It's a little puzzle, and it's you versus yourself. It's the greatest like PVE physical activity you can ever do. Yeah,
100% agree. Yes. Nice. Is that where you recharge and where you take the time for yourself?
Yeah, I think that I'm really fortunate that while like it's very different from a normal job, right? Mm-hmm. I think there's my weekends are always a little bit weird. Nothing
you can spend all of your time if you'd like to in your job.
100%. And I did for probably 4 years.
Same.
And it was not very good for me.
I think it was unhealthy.
It was, yeah, it's just not healthy because the rest of, I was like, I did great at work today, and I'd go home and I like was 3 years behind on my American taxes. And I was like, that's a problem. Mm-hmm. Probably I'm caught up now. Don't come after me, please. I'm caught up now. You know, it's just like letting everything else go to the wayside. And I think that it was nice when I first moved to Germany, right? And it was all very like, everything was foreign to me. I was struggling to learn German.
Yeah.
And even now I'm struggling to learn German to have work to pour all this time into. But now, in recent years, I've found a better balance. And I think in general, esports has always been nice because after Worlds, Riot is really good about just like giving everyone time. Sometimes there were All-Stars, which would disrupt a bit, but they've always been really good about like, it's weird to work most of the year and then just have one giant chunk off at the end. I'm still not used to it. But they were really good about always making sure that we had that. And I think over the years, as Riot has done esports longer, they've figured out more ways and they're better about finding little pockets of time where you can take, whether it's right before an event or right after an event. But it's all very kind of context and project dependent, right? Like I after MSI, I just kept working because there was some stuff that needed to happen behind the scenes. And so I'm lucky now that, shout out to my colleagues, especially Medic and Hysterics, both play-by-play casters who are stepping up to cover some of my assignments so I can take the next 2 weeks off of show.
Nice.
Which is very nice. I get to see some friends. I get to go to a concert or two. I'll still check in one or 2 days to make sure people have what they need because we're not, you know, we don't have a million play-by-play casters. You never know if someone's going to get sick or whatever. But I think we've gotten better over the years, both as talent and also Riot as a company at like covering, making sure that people actually can have time to step away, because if you want, like, it's interesting because you need a little bit of time just to forget about work. You need like, it's like an airlock, you know, you need a little bit of time for the pressure to balance out and then you can relax, and then you need a little bit of time to get back into it, and then you can go. And it's really hard to do with just like one day here or one day there. You really do need some time to step away from it. And I always find that I'm way more excited about all of the intricate details of League of Legends or of making a broadcast when I am able to step away for a week or a couple extra days.
Yeah.
So I'm jazzed. Yeah.
Yeah. You underestimate like taking a time, taking a break or taking
a
time.
Yeah, 100%.
For us, it was the same. When we started, we had like, from time to time, I had to do LCK and NALCS at the same time. It was crazy.
Yeah.
But when we grew our team, it was easier to shift around and to have people cover for you, which is always nice. But take your breaks. And we're going to do the...
Are you the kind of person that struggled with it when other people came in? Were you like, I don't want to give it up? I don't want to give up LCK and LCS?
Let's talk about that after a quick break.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, let's talk about it after a quick break. But wenn wir wieder zurück reingehen. Ich starte wieder auf Deutsch. Herzlich willkommen zurück. Wir machen wie auch in den anderen Staffeln und in der ersten Folge mit Tolkien wieder, machen sie das, lassen sie das. In Englisch ist das ein bisschen schwieriger. We are basically, I don't have a name for this segment in English yet, but basically I'm naming groups of people.
Yeah.
For example, bot laners.
Got it.
And you are telling me what they should do more or less often, right? For we can start with like LEC viewers. What should they do more often? What should they not do?
Oh, dang, more often or less often? LEC viewers.
Take your time. It can be anything.
That's tough.
Yes.
I'll be honest. I don't know. I don't want to start a... The problem is I'm not trying to start...
You can start with a
rap-level beef, you know what I mean?
Oh,
that's
oh,
my
I
thing.
But isn't that your thing, actually?
Yeah.
Rapping?
Well, sure. All right, I'll just... Fine, we'll go for it. You got it out of me. All right, here's the thing. I think that if you really care about League of Legends, you're excited about League of Legends, and it's a big part of, you know, what you do. You watch League of Legends, you play League of Legends. I think it's important that you take time to form your own opinions, because as much as I love hearing Cadril's opinion, if I wanted Cadril's opinion or Dom's opinion or whatever, I would go watch their content. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's a lot of people who really care, and they're really trustworthy guys. It's not like their opinions are wrong, but I think sometimes people need to take that extra step to evaluate, like, hey, do I really agree with this? And I think that League of Legends, and probably like any community, we all have a bad habit of, if someone we like or trust says a thing, we're very quick to be like, hell yeah, that's great. Let's go with that.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's not that Cadril or Dom, those are just two random examples, are frequently off base, right? But that's their opinion. You're allowed to have your own unique, you can have this like a crazy unique opinion. But I think the thing is like, we are a little too quick to hive mind sometimes.
True.
You know what I mean? We're a little too quick to be like, I could take this time, or I could jump on the bandwagon. Let's hate that player, or let's not like that guy. And I think that, like, it's hard to do, but I found it really nice sometimes to just take a step back, like, look at a thing, whether it's, like, how a player's been performing or something like that, OM League, and be like, what do I think of this person? And then go take into account other people's opinions. Form your own opinion first, and then go elsewhere. You know what I mean?
That's pretty good. Yeah, completely. I totally agree. What about the LEC broadcast team, though? What should they do more often, or what should they do less?
For English broadcast team, I think we need to loosen up.
Oh.
Yeah, we need to loosen up. I think there's, you know, as LEC has gone on, I think people are it's hard sometimes to find, whether it's the energy or fear of failure or what that's holding people back. I think sometimes they have a hard time like letting go and just, again, like you talked about, being themselves. And I think especially as we bring in so much new talent, the thing that I'm saying more and more to newer people who are joining the team is like, you got to try stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be ready to fail. And I'm really trying to tell them, like, you can, not in season finals, but like in a regular season, you know, you can try something new. It's okay. Like, LEC doesn't need to be your practice ground, but it can also be a testing ground. As long as the concept behind your segment or your idea or how you want to sell a point or what you're really fired up about is like, is solid, as long as the foundation is solid, you can really get out there. You know, you can try stuff. And I think it is a really hard place to be when you are coming into a scene. You're new. It's overwhelming how different it is from sitting in your bedroom when you're casting remote to like being in a studio and there's story meetings like you talked about. There's all these processes and structures.
Yeah.
It is hard to find your own voice, but I think that that's the thing that I really want for our broadcast again, because what really made the LEC so great, I think, when the rebrand came through in 2019 was we had so many people on the team with different opinions, and it wasn't easy. A lot, we fought a lot, but that conflict makes good stuff. You know what I mean? And there's always a line where there's too much, but I think that for us, what I'm hopeful for in the future and in the splits to come is that we can really reignite those strong opinions in a way that's really productive, and the passion and the unique personality, so that we're setting people up to do more crazy, unique stuff, and we're not ever in a position where we feel like we're, you know, taking for granted like how big League is or how special this League is, and like allowing ourselves to stop growing. And I don't think we're there, but I do think that like, we can always be, you know, stronger. And I don't want it to be like the guy who's like, we can always be better, because they're like, you should still celebrate success. You don't, I don't want this to be like toxic levels, you know. But I think that there's a lot of people who I've started working with or started giving feedback, who are young casters, who are, you know, they're so scared and they're so nervous and they're so uncertain, like, what they should do or what they can't do. Yeah. And I'm really excited to see how they grow and, like, yeah, kind of the casters or presenters or broadcast personalities or even players in interviews, you know, kind of excited to see the personalities that they turn into. So that's the thing I want for the LEC broadcast and the LEC broadcast team, is for us all to, you know, find that unique thing and really capitalize on it and grow.
That's a really good thing.
Yeah.
And I also think we talked about it already, but it's not easy to get there.
Yeah.
But to aim for it is, like, the most important thing. You talked about structure as well.
Yeah.
And being a little bit more open-minded and creative. What about Germans, though? What should Germans do more or less?
Germans in general?
Germans in general, yeah.
Oh, it's so weird, because, like, I'm really aware of how almost my entire German experience has been Berlin, and there's probably a lot of Germans who are like, Berlin's Berlin and Germany's Germany.
True.
It's separate. I think the moment I knew that I was, like, aligned with Berlin was we got new neighbors, and they were not sorting their trash correctly. And I was so upset because, mm-hmm, lots of people order stuff off Amazon,
mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm,
and they weren't breaking down their boxes. And it was the moment I was like, I have never had I'm in my 30s moment bigger than, I've lived in Germany for a long time moment than when I, like, knocked on their door to tell them about their recycling.
You did.
Yeah. It was weird. In hindsight, it was very odd. I was like, wow, this is not, I don't know. I was possessed by the soul of, like, my first German landlord who was, like, taught me the ways,
mm-hmm,
not very nicely, mm-hmm, but he did. He was very clear in his instructions. I don't know what Germans, like, need to do more or less of.
Sort your trash.
No, sorting your trash is important.
Yeah.
Fellow Auslanders, bro, we gotta, please. I cannot fit. If you break down your boxes, we can all fit our boxes in the recycling. If you don't, It's Lord of the Flies.
That's
it's
true.
It's every, and I don't want to regress like that. Please break down your boxes. Otherwise, Germans, I don't know. It's so weird because I'm in such a bubble. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Most of the time, like, it. All the Germans that I know speak English to me because I work on an English product. I work on a team that's very multinational, but yeah, English is the bridge language. I've got no beef with Germans. I would say Berlin people,
yeah,
clubbers. You could just, at, like, 8 a.m. on a Saturday or a Sunday when you're coming out of the club, no judgment from me, but, like, you could just take it down a little bit, you know? Like, the clothes can stay on public transport, just a little bit. Mm-hmm. Like, I get, you're having a night out, I'm not here to judge you.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that I'm going to my, you know, morning climb before I do, because I'm an old man, as I've apparently established here.
I noticed.
Morning,
yeah,
climb before I go to work for the day. I'm just seeing too much, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Keep it in the club. That's my only request.
Yeah.
Only 8 a.m. Sunday. Friday night, Saturday night, do whatever you want. Sunday night, you know, live your life. Mm-hmm. But the morning after, just a little less. That's
Got
my
that.
Request. But that's, that. I think that's not just Germans. I think that's the club goers. I think that's a pretty international crowd.
It's a Berlin thing, right?
Yeah, but, for sure.
My next question would have been, what should club doers do more or less? So it's completely
drink
fine.
Drink water. Yeah, drink water. That's a reminder. That's a wholesome shout out.
You should do the same.
Yeah, that's a reminder. Actually, it's pretty sweaty in here, not going to lie.
You should do the same as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, quick water break.
Okay. That's been Machen Sie das, Lachen Sie das. But we stopped talking about, like, taking breaks.
Yeah.
And you asked me if that has been a problem for me. Totally. 100%. I've been a workaholic when I started. You asked me if it was hard for me to give up, like, LCS or LCK when I did both, for example.
Yeah.
And I think for me it was like I always tried to fill the niche or the job that had to be done. Mm-hmm. Because when I started for Simonis Inn, we had a lot of talents like Maxime and Sola, and they've been influencers and casters.
Yep.
So they had a lot of time that they needed for their videos and stuff like that. So I took every broadcast that I could to help them create more free time or spare time for them. And it wasn't, I think I miss LCK still because it was a solo cast and it was always fun to give myself some.
Solo casting is great. It's so funny.
It's so cool.
It's the most manic I have ever felt. Like, you feel so crazy because you're basically just having a conversation with yourself the
yes,
entire time.
Yes.
But it is very fun.
Yeah, because you try to set yourself up for like some transitions or anything joke-wise, right?
Yeah.
And it was hilarious. I missed that from time to time, but when I gave up LCK and LCS, I joined the German LEC team and mm-hmm. I started to host the whole broadcast, and then I got into Prime League. So for me, it was always nice to have something new, but I missed some parts of the old products that I managed, because I was also a product manager. I did a lot of things.
Yeah, everybody. I feel like the early days of esports are everyone doing three jobs.
Yeah, it was me creating overlays and also communicating with the LCK team over Skype. It was, and then doing broadcast.
I mean, to be fair, like, there are a lot of what should have been very secure Riot esports communications that were done over Skype for like all of the early 2010s, man.
It was so crazy.
That's where we did our story, like before story meeting planning, or if we ever had to do anything online, it was all Skype.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a weird time. esports is wild.
Yeah, we're a lot more professional now in that regard. And we have like big events. For example, when this episode... when you're listening to this on the day that it comes out or is released, basically we both might be in Munich at the time, because the LEC finals are right in front of us. And I think to see how far we've come, how the events grew and stuff like that, is pretty amazing to me, to see where we started years and years and years ago and what we're doing now, a whole arena for the main event, but also stuff on the side for everyone to experience League of Legends on a different level, right? How do you think this evolved over the time, and what is your thoughts and opinions about this event that we are totally on right now?
Where right around.
We are in Munich now.
We're in Munich right now.
Yeah. How do
time.
You feel now in Munich?
I think... how I will feel, I don't know. I think that there's something so special about a roadshow, about everyone, you know, traveling if they live in Munich and it's 20 minutes, or if they live somewhere completely different and it's like a couple, you know, hours, and there's booking a hotel. There's something so special about everyone really coming together for that event. It's so unique to have those experiences. And, you know, it's not, the thing that makes me really happy is that over the years, I think Riot, and there's a lot of other esports, mm-hmm. You know, production teams and events that do this too. But I think Riot has done a really good job of making there be that more experience, right? In Munich, there's a lot more going on. There's a whole nother side event going on. There's a fan fest. There's a lot of things going on. And I think that for me, it's really cool that there's all these places where you can be a community of League of Legends players and League of Legends fans past just watching the games. And I also really, really love that we have a MIA Masters Finals happening there too, because that to me is so, because I don't interact with it a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, right, I'm like, I'm there just long enough to see who's going to get picked up for LEC, you know? It feels kind of weird. I feel like I'm like peeking in to see who's going to get, you know, picked up, whose contract is going to get grabbed by some top level team. But those moments are always so incredible. And I think the regional rivalries it's ignited are always so cool. And also seeing the players who, you know, like Power of Evil, for example, who like found success in LEC, then dropped down and is now, you know, once again making a name for himself. And he's such a good dude, and it's so cool to see like the fans back him, and then to see what it looks like when he's going to go toe to toe with a, you know, a Spanish team or a French team, or who knows, like if a Czech team can upset. That's really special to me too, because I think that in general, you don't, that's like a flavor of European League of Legends or EMEA League of Legends that you don't get as much in LEC, these really strong regional rivalries. We're very fortunate that we got more this year with Mad Lions Koi and with KC.
Mm-hmm.
But in general, that's also just so cool to me, because it's such a different, it's so funny to see who's, there's a lot of people who like have a team in both, and there's a lot of people who don't. And so it's always funny to me to see like the last year there were Fnatic fans who were also KC fans, and now this year I wonder for the road show if they're KC or if they're back to KC Fnatic, because KC won't be there. Like, all right, man, now you can be KC all the way.
True,
you can be KC the French team and KC the LEC team, or the LFL team and the LEC team together. It's like, let's see how that's going to shape up, because it's so crazy to see those different layers of fandom. Yeah, and it's just, you know, it's just the best, because it pulls totally. Everyone out. You know, you go to a broadcast every day, you go to a studio every day, or if you're a regular viewer of the LEC, you don't take it for granted. It's always a cool experience, but it doesn't always have that specialness to it. But when everyone is there for the sole purpose of that event, it's very unique, and I like it a lot.
It's a nice atmosphere, right?
Yeah.
For us especially, we never had like this live audience that you have.
Yeah.
Because even when you switch the studio, you still have people there cheering for all the teams. And we only had the studio and us and our crew. And it was like such an experience to see people live reacting to what is happening, cheering, making these boards with something written or drawings, cosplaying and stuff like that. You start to really feel that League of Legends isn't just a game. It's about community and creativity. And not only the things that we love to do for the broadcast, or that that we do in a creative way, like music, for example.
Sure.
That's not only these things. There are so much more aspects to this whole thing where people connect with League of Legends lore, for example. We didn't even touch that topic, right?
Yeah.
But people are, some of them at least, solely into the whole lore theme and waiting for stuff like the MMO and you're all coming together, getting out of your comfort zone or your home and start to celebrate together.
I like it especially because I think esports attracts, when people think about esports, they think about like a diehard competition.
Yeah.
And it's so different from lore or cosplay.
Totally.
It's on the complete opposite side. So when you see those groups come together, it is such a unique thing. Because it's so funny, you know, every once in a while in an interview, you'll meet a pro who you would never guess cares about lore, and then they'll know every single fun fact. And it's just, I get used to looking at our players or looking at, and people maybe get used to looking at the LEC, like it's a professional sports broadcast, sometimes professionals in quotation marks, but you know, it's always at least professionally made.
True.
And it's always so cool to see like the other sides of it too. What else people can be excited about? Because there is so much going on. It's not just esports, right? It's also just the entire breadth of the game, whether it's shows or, you know, 2XKO or the future MMO or whatever it's going to be. Like, there's so much you could, or TFT, right? There's like, the list goes on and on in terms of things you can be interested in that are about League of Legends.
And you're also connecting, for example, players and fans, right? Yeah. Because as a player, I think it's even more of an experience to see such a crowd cheering for you. Because even if you have like a small group of people in the studio during the split, if there are thousands of people cheering for you and sharing this moment of winning or losing, which is also pretty emotional, it's completely crazy.
It's also so wild today compared to how it was, you know, 2016, 2017, 2015, because it used to be when you came into LEC, you played Challenger, which never had a live audience except for like one match, right? And I still remember even then, like when players would play their first live match on stage, Upset, for example, like when he first came to League, he was really nervous. I remember being a really nervous guy. And since then, he's obviously like well past that, but he was so scared. And now you compare that to the ERL players that are coming in, whether it's from Prime League or whatever. It's like a lot of the times because, you know, for LFL and LVP especially, they're able to put on these crazy live events. Interviewing a rookie today, they're like, yeah, whatever, you know, 3,000 people, fine. I'm like, what? Because when I started, I remember players like shaking. They were so nervous. You know, I'd walk up to Trevor while he was getting ready, while he was getting ready to like an announce at a big event, and you'd see the rookie and he was just physically shaking because he'd never been in front of a crowd more than 100 or 200 at that point, because that was the LEC, or at the time the EULCS studio, and now you can like the roar, the bass, the sheer bass of that many people just making noise. And now it's so funny because they're all EMEA Masters and all these other opportunities for people to play in front of big crowds. There's so many players who I'm always like, are you nervous? How do you feel? And they're like, yeah, whatever, man, it's fine. Like, don't be weird about it. I'm like, I'm just so blown away that there's people coming in who have that, you know, that breadth of experience, are so unfazed by how many people are watching them. It's cool.
A lot of things changed. The broadcast changed how people view esports, League of Legends, how we're all doing what we're doing, right?
Sure.
But what do you think about this final? What do you think? Like, is there a favorite?
So
anything you want to predict.
I don't want to, I'm going to break the fourth wall a little bit as I look down the barrel. We are recording this after week one of the season finals.
Yeah.
So as of right now, Fnatic clean swept BDS and MDK pulled off a 5-game upset versus G2. Mm-hmm. I think G2 are still the safe bet for the finals. But I think that it is going to be G2 versus Mad Lions Koi in the final.
Really?
I think that on paper, it should be Fnatic.
Yeah.
And I think that the funny thing is all three of these teams are so inconsistent and unpredictable. So this is the least substantial prediction I can ever make in my life, which is great, which is actually great because I hate when a team does, they're so predictable. You're like, okay, they should probably just win. Totally. Like, you know, they're reliable, but reliable in a way that isn't flashy. But I don't know. I'm a big believer in momentum.
Okay.
MDK just beat G2 in a 5-game series. It didn't work for Fnatic before because they won in our summer finals in the upper bracket and then lost horribly in the summer finals. Like, oh, God, embarrassingly bad. But they recovered. But I love Mirwin.
Okay.
Shout out to Mirwin. If you don't know Mirwin, Mirwin's a Spanish top laner. He refuses to play Melee Champions. Mm-hmm. He will counterpick every time, and he will pick the weirdest stuff. Very big Mirwin fan.
Okay.
He also loves K-pop, and he keeps talking about K-pop.
That's a big argument. Yeah.
Like, the guy oozes charisma. He's a goofy dude. And I like players. I've criticized him so many times. I'm like, he needs to be able to play normal stuff. He needs to be able to play normal stuff. He needs to be able to play normal stuff. And they've lost.
Who teached you?
No. I mean, this is the first time, to be fair. I have been right many times, but now I'm completely wrong because he did just play 5 weird champs against Broken Blade, who I think most people would consider the best top in our region, and he eventually won. And so I like when players are so committed to doing what it is that they do that they'll ignore all criticism and keep going. Now, most of the players who do that end up losing a lot and disappearing forever. But while this man is in the limelight, I'm going to be excited about him. That said, this may have aged poorly by the time the podcast comes out.
We will see.
You can also cut this out, and I could just say we could both say every possible final.
Every possible lineup,
yeah. And then they'll put the right one in, and we'll both sound like geniuses.
Yeah.
The power of technology. No.
let's go for like every possible way that the finals could end. So 3-2, 3-0, 3-1.
Yes. We'll be here for another hour just to set it up, but we could both sound really smart.
We could do that. But we could also...
I hope... I think G2... We'll see what happens. I don't think they're as much of a sure thing as they used to be. They've already technically locked Worlds, which I think isn't good for their motivation, I would guess. As much as I'm sure they would say, oh, it's fine, you know, whatever, we're here to win it all, I think there's a difference between... You can't fake it.
True.
You know what I mean?
True.
You can't... It's hard. Some people can. I can't. I think a lot of people struggle with that. So G2 and somebody, but I think right now, MDK. Okay. I'm excited about it. Excited what they got to show.
Nice. I'm really looking forward to it. And maybe picking weird top laners is just ahead of the curve. Maybe he's like Vettius, for example, and he's doing his own stuff. And
100%.
I think we've seen in some leagues, at least, the Felix draft already. Yeah. And I think if Felix draft really becomes a thing for LEC or other regions, it could be nice to have a top laner who is comfortable picking other stuff. And 100%. Also, I think this is a topic which might shape esports or League of Legends, reshape a lot
100%.
Of things. Because I think there have been talks during the last years about a 10-people lineup where there's a substitute for every position, which could be more important if you have to switch a lot of picks and bans. For everyone who doesn't know what Felix draft is, basically you are allowed to just ban or pick champions once, and then you have to pick champions from the rest of the pool, which is nice, I think, in some kind of way, because you have a lot of variety and you have a lot of champs in League of Legends right now. But it also is a lot harder to predict and find tactics, right?
Sure, 100%.
Do you think this will come to LEC, or are there talks about getting to Felix draft?
As I understand it right now, next year they've already announced there's 3 international events, right? And the first international event is Fearless. So my assumption would be, and this is not confirmed, my assumption would be that whatever formats each league takes domestically, that Fearless will show up in that first split at the very least, because you need to prep for a Fearless tournament, right? I love Fearless.
I love Fearless as well.
I love Fearless.
It's
so from a competitive standpoint, I think it is fair to be like, this is bad. And I can see that, but I don't think it's bad. I think it's just very different. Mm-hmm. But you've essentially got, whatever, where do we start, 2009, a million years of League of Legends history. It's been so many years of competitive where this wasn't the skill set that was rewarded to such an extreme degree, this depth of champion pool. And the meta has been, over the years, while there have been really groundbreaking meta moments, whether that's from patch like 2015 Worlds or someone like figuring something out.
I remember Zyra against
Zyra MF, 2016, T1 last year where they figured out, well, actually it wasn't T1 who figured it out, but T1 who leveraged it a lot, the range supports, who came back in a big way. There are those little changes, and Fearless would like kick that up to 11. You know, it would be incredible for me. I think the big thing for me is like, League of Legends is a constant ongoing balance puzzle. And I don't think, like, I think the balance team would tell you, I won't speak for the balance team. Maybe you'll get a chance to talk to them at some point. But, like, there's always going to be champions who slip through the cracks and are too strong. And I think this, to me, levels the playing field so much. And I would be so excited to see a meta where individual pocket picks come back. Because if you think back to, like, when we all first got into this, let's say season two.
Yeah.
Like Wicked's Aurelia. When was the last time you were like, oh, this guy's that? Like, really? Like, yes, there are some unique pocket picks. Yes, it happens every once in a while. Like, Lehend's played Singed. But it was never like, uh-oh, here comes Lehend Singed. It's like, oh, God, it's Lehend Singed game. Sometimes it was good. A lot of times it was not so good. And I think that unique identity of like a player and on a champion would just be, if we can bring back even a little bit of that, I think it would be so exciting, because once you get past the you know, top three champions in a role, which are usually very similar champions, right?
Always. If it's like, it's so easy to predict drops.
Usually. Then the world really opens up, and it becomes so much more about the depth of your game knowledge and the depth of your matchup knowledge. And I do think it means that there will be less time for teams to focus on other things, most certainly. But from an entertainment standpoint, and this is, you know, it's sport, but it's also entertainment. I would just be so thrilled, right? I love the intricacies of like why something is good into something else, right? And like we had Vi into Morgana, which is, Morgana has been good into Vi as long as Vi has been a champion, but this is the first time in like 5 years where they've both been viable in the same role, and or, you know, the last time I think we saw Morgana into Vi was Morgana support, and that, but that interaction has always been really good. It's just that those champions couldn't ever both exist at the same time because they just weren't strong on the same patch. And so I would love a world where we don't have to wait for them to perfectly line up. We can say, okay, they got Vi, but we're seven junglers deep, and now maybe we grab Morgana. Maybe it's not the best, but you get this cool, unique interaction, and you're rewarded for really knowing how all the champions work and like what is good into them and what is not good into them. That flexibility is so cool to see. So yeah, I'm a shameless fan of Fearless. There are probably a lot of coaches who would give me 100 million reasons why I'm an idiot and I will ruin competitive League of Legends, but until they tell me their reasons, I'm gonna keep loving Fearless. I think it's so much fun.
Same And I think we're talking a lot about broadcast stuff, so we are more on the entertainment side of things.
Certainly,
But when I've seen Fearless Draft being tried out in the last events that I've seen it, it always created a special dynamic where players were also able to show their pocket picks or their favorite picks. And I think this is also an important feature maybe for like a broadcast, obviously, but if you are able to not frame players as a one trick, but when you know that it's Lehend Singed, right? Like you mentioned, it's always nice, and it might also be good for the player or the fans to have someone to identify with. Though I'm a bot, or I have been a bot, one trick for a long time. And it was always nice to see him, right?
Always your jazz, and you know so much, and then they do something new, and it's exciting.
It's super cool, and I think there will be a lot of opportunities to create this feeling for a lot of viewers. And I think this will be a nice thing to look forward to in the near future. And I would really like to talk to you again, Dragos, because I think there are a lot of things
We didn't even get to go to the other topics. They're not even ready. We don't even have enough time in the world.
5 hours to talk about Fearless Draft, 3 to talk about climbing, which would also be nice, but it's a League of Legends podcast and we have a certain amount of time that we can fill. So as we're going to wrap this up, we always end on a positive note,
sure,
where my guest is thanking someone,
yeah,
who influenced him, like, mm-hmm, a real-life dual partner, for example.
Yeah.
Is there anyone you would be you would like to give a shout-out or thank?
I think I've shouted out Vettius enough in the podcast, so I'll pick someone, yes, different, although I am very grateful for him. Shout-out to Dirk, who, mm-hmm, used to work with Riot, who's no longer with Riot, who was our broadcast lead for a long time. I think that he used to drive me crazy because he would fight me, and he would push me, and he would drive me crazy. And it was his show, and he would always, yeah, come into meetings, and he would say things like, why aren't we talking about Reckless? It was annoying because, like, oh, analytically, it's a guy that Reckless isn't, blah, 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 blah. And he's like, but the fans want to hear about Reckless. And he always had such strong opinions. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's something that at the time, when those strong opinions fought with whatever it is I wanted to do, I didn't really appreciate. But I'm really grateful that I had a leader and ultimately a mentor. He helped me with a lot of things over my career, who didn't just give me easy challenges.
Yeah.
I think it's very easy when you're in esports to just go with the flow.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a guy that wasn't afraid to fight. And I hated him for it many times. And I loved him for it sometimes. But I'm very grateful for, like, kind of the mentorship that he gave me over my time.
I think it created a good dynamic, right? Where you've been able to reach this point where you're,
yeah,
now, right? And,
yeah,
it wouldn't have been possible without him.
Sure.
So thanks to Dirk.
Shout out to Dirk. I can't pronounce his last name. Nishtud Kuta. He'd get mad at me. He tried to explain it to me like a million times.
Fortunately, I can pronounce your last name, Drakos.
Nice. Good job.
Not Cephas, right?
Please, no. Never again. That was the last time. That's the last time
we left that behind us.
We left that behind. Cut that part out.
But thank you very much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having
me. Such an awesome chat with me. I'm really looking forward to see you in Munich.
Yeah, same. And it's going to be great.
It's going to be awesome.
With who's ever in the finals. But hopefully the teams I said, but maybe
hopefully,
not.
Hopefully. We're going to cut the right thing in. Thank you to you guys as well, listening to us. Dankeschön, dass ihr zugehört habt, wie immer. Ich hoffe, ihr hattet eine tolle Folge und ihr hattet Spaß. Und wir sehen uns in der nächsten Folge wieder. Da werden wir mit Maximilian reden, auch von Riot. Da werden wir nochmal ein bisschen mehr so hinter den Kulissen reinschauen. Da haben wir einiges für euch in dieser Staffel. Insofern, vielen, vielen Dank, dass ihr hier wart. Vielen Dank, Drakos.
Thank you.
Und wir sehen uns in der nächsten Folge. Ciao, ciao.